Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everyone. Happy New Year. A couple things. We've got the economic outlook that I think goes out. If it didn't go out yesterday, it's going out today. We also have a piece coming this week on our outlook for China. And with us today is Terrence Tsang, we're gonna talk to about his views on China firsthand, because he's from China. And with that, I'm gonna turn it over to Freddie just to cover earnings and what we're doing in portfolios from an equity standpoint.
Thanks, Greg. Earnings kicked off last week with banks. They were mostly positive. JP Morgan reported earnings of $2.57 a share, which was a 19% increase. Revenue rose 9%. Bond trading revenue specifically was up 86% to $3.4 billion. So very good quarter for JPM. The stock was up 3.5% on the release of earnings. And we had a similar story for Citi. Earnings and revenue beats. Fixed income trading was $2.9 billion, which rose 49%. And the stock was also up 3%. The best earnings report by far was Morgan Stanley, which rose 8% on their earnings, with profit up 46% to $1.30 a share. Revenue was up 27% to $10.86 billion. Investment management was up. Bond trading was up 32%. And their wealth management division grew 11%. And then finally, on the negative side, Wells Fargo reported earnings of 93 cents, which missed, and revenue missed as well. Quarterly profit was down 53%, and the stock fell 4%.
And I don't think that the market's discounting what the merger between Schwab and TD is going to impact Wells' wealth management business. I don't think the market's fully discounted that.
Right. I agree. And then finally, worth mentioning, Alphabet or Google became the fourth company joining Amazon, Apple, and Microsoft with a market cap of $1 trillion last week.
Yeah, I want to be a member of that club. Okay, Tesla. You guys are following Tesla. Largest auto company by market cap is Tesla now.
That's insane.
I know. It is.
Given how many cars they actually sell.
Good news coming out of, again, it's coming out of China, right?
So yeah, on just to talk about international equities, recap of last year. S&P 500 large cap domestic stocks were obviously the big winner, up 31%. Everyone else had great returns relative to any other year, but we're all about 10% less than the S&P 500. So emerging market index was up 17.5. The MSCI ACWI ex-US, so that's basically everything except for the US, was up 22.5. And then we're going to talk about China. So specifically the MSCI China index was up 21.5. So you can see a lot of underperformance out of the rest of the world. On the valuation side, everything did expand. Multiples expanded. We've talked about how the S&P 500 expanded from 14 to 19, obviously coming off a very low number from the fourth quarter of 2018. But valuations across the globe are still pretty low and seem cheap to the U.S. So if you're looking at the emerging market index, trades at 13 times earnings. That is under the five-year average of 14.5. And if you're looking at the ACWI, trading at 14.5, which normally trades at 16.5. So the rest of the world does look cheap. We've been struggling. We have been underweight international, both developed and emerging. We have been looking for an opportunity to add. I think that the China trade deal does change some of that. And the valuations make a case for it, but right now we're looking for where the growth is going to come from. So we're going to talk about that a little bit today. I just want to use it as a segue.
Yeah, let me jump in before you segue, though. Right now, this is my favorite conference I've never attended is Davos. So that just got kicked off. And the IMF released its global growth numbers for 2020. And so they actually are slightly positive. So there's this kind of sentiment that we've hit a bottom and that there's global growth. At the same time, something to watch is Italy's government is again deteriorating. So the whole five-star movement that came into power to help as a catalyst for change and largely a populist movement is starting to splinter. And what that means, I think, is the eighth government in 8 years now, if it does fall apart. And if you think about what it takes to get a government up and running and established and an agenda going, is that this is just another problem that Italy's going to have. So you got global growth optimistically turning, and then you've got the third largest economy or fourth largest economy in Europe that's starting to really show some trouble. And the answer to that is always spend more money. Where do you get the money? You borrow. And so this is that growing debt problem. So kind of bookending what's going on globally, I think. Go ahead, Adam.
So I think with that, we'll see what Charlie has talked about in high yield.
Yeah, real quick note, I'll keep on with the theme of the day. With the signing of the phase one of the U.S.-China trade deal, high yield tightened, triple C's were the far out performer, along with energy. Until we see any reason why the president's office may call any part of the trade deal in question, I don't have any feeling that triple C's and energy will not make up any of the ground they lost in 2019. Another area potentially positively affected by a trade deal would be metal and chemical companies. Commodity prices such as aluminum and TiO2 have been decimated by lack of demand in 2019. Aluminum company Alcoa called for demand to recover by 2.5% in their most recent earnings, with China accounting for up to 2% of that. So we actually took a position in Alcoa 10 years, and I would look at high yield debt that's more centered around commodities like aluminum. I would caution investors though, in the secondary market, from my experience, is super well bid right now. We were looking at Netflix 2030s, started the week, offered indication at 103, and then by the end of the week, those were bid up 1.5 to 104.5. So there's lots of room to chase, and I would caution investors there. That'll be it on my note for high yield this week.
Well, let's transition into the whole China topic. With us is Terrence Zhang. Terrence, we're gonna, in our models, we have an international exposure. At the beginning of last year, we really wrestled with adding to international. We chose not to because the global growth piece of it wasn't coming together. We could not find a catalyst. Both emerging and developed countries lag the U.S., large cap U.S., and we are looking at increasing developed. We've got a sleeve of China that we use in the emerging markets exposure. We put it on early. I think we put that on back in May, June of last year, and with the thesis that the U.S.-China trade issues would not last as long as they did. So with the U.S.-China trade, we wanted to talk with you. Let me get this started. Terrence, what part of China are you from?
I'm from Shenzhen, China, which is right next to Hong Kong. It's a big city with 3 million people.
And your family is, you still have family there?
Yes, I do.
And friends?
Yes.
Lots of friends?
I do have friends.
Okay. And then where'd you study?
I studied for my high school. I came to U.S. for high school. I went to Idaho and then Seattle. And then I went to Indiana University for my...
So all of your education that was done here in the United States?
Basically, yeah.
Did you learn English here in the United States?
No, I learned it since kindergarten.
So English is taught in the Chinese school system?
Yes.
Okay. So the friends that you still have in China, are they working? What do they do?
Well, most of them, let's say half of my middle school class are not living in China anymore.
Okay.
Like myself, I'm outside living in the US. I have friends in Canada, Australia, Singapore, and Germany, England, everywhere. But for the people who are left, most of them are working, yes.
Okay. So is it the desire amongst that peer group to live abroad and then return to China? Or is it to live abroad and make a life outside of China?
From my impression, most of the people who are still not going back to China at this point, they are deciding to stay outside of China, yes.
And why is that?
Well, for different reasons. Some people view this as a freer world outside of China, and some of them it's for political purposes.
Okay.
A lot of them have their family and their family enterprise has connection with the government, they do want to send their kids abroad to a foreign country just for the safety.
Okay, so from China's perspective, how did China view the U.S. China trade war issue or currently going on?
Most of the people in China, like the popular opinion, is that the U.S. trying to rip Chinese off. That's the popular opinion. But on the other hand, some of them think this trade deal is totally for the benefit of Chinese.
Mm. Okay, so China's economy is different from the United States.
Very different.
So can you talk about how it's different?
Well, in different perspective, first, the government controls everything. So government has a say in everything. In basically, the state-owned enterprise are the largest enterprise in China. They control essentially every aspect of the economy. And that's why a lot of people are calling in question that the numbers coming out of this government bureaus are not true, but that's up for debate.
Okay, so how does China view its economic initiatives? What's its goal?
Its goal is to have economic control for the Asia-Pacific region. That's their economic goal.
Okay, not the world, just the Asia-Pacific region.
At this point, yes.
Okay, so then how does China view its trade relationships with Russia, the Middle East, the United States, Japan?
For that, I think China is just wanting to make money. That's the pure capitalism view. I don't think they are seeking control over, say, the U.S. economy or Russia economy, but they do want to develop a good relationship with Middle East. That's why China has been keep backing Iran.
So who's China's biggest or most important trading partner?
U.S. and Japan.
U.S. and Japan, okay. Why does China build these big buildings that sit empty?
Well, because people buy it.
Who buys them?
Chinese citizen as an investment.
So do your friends buy them?
Yeah. It's a really good investment. It's actually, in my personal view, the best investment you can get in China.
Is an empty building?
Well, you can't live in two houses.
Okay.
But if you can invest in, say, 30 apartments, you can't live in all.
What I'm reading is there are cities that are just with these big buildings that are just sitting empty.
You're talking about the ghost city?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Those are just bad decisions from the government. Government allocating the capital, and they are bad investments.
And the idea is that people from rural areas move into these cities to get manufacturing jobs, to get a higher standard of living. And
correct. That was the thesis from the government. But then at the end of the day, the company needs to create jobs in cities. And the company are not comfortable moving to those newly built city that they don't know the government.
So is it easy for your friends to get a job?
Depends on their skill set.
Okay.
But currently the official unemployment rate is at a record low, which I personally don't see as the case, but that's just my personal view.
And so are those manufacturing jobs, service jobs?
I'm seeing, from my personal circle, I'm seeing manufacturing job fading away, but there's a lot of service related job at it. So, which is kind of China is trying to transform into a service.
So, can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, up to 1975, it was heavy agriculture. They built this manufacturing base, and they're trying to get people moving out of rural areas into the cities to build a manufacturing base. Now they want to shift from a real estate development, manufacturing-centric economy to one that's got more consumption, is
correct.
My understanding. Is that,
correct.
Did I summarize
yes.
that?
Yes, that's
is it
very
work-
accurate.
Is it working?
It is, in a sense, but for the city I'm from, that's the Tencent headquarters. So that's why there's a lot of this tech company around my area. And Shenzhen is also one of the freest city in China, which means it has very friendly government toward the government's attitude toward enterprise are really kind. So they usually don't try to tax them out of business, for that sense.
So US and China have a phase one deal.
Yes.
What does that now mean for China and its economic growth?
If you believe that China will uphold every aspect in the trade deal, everyone will be better off. China will be better off, Chinese citizens will be better off, the US will be better off. It's a great deal if China decide to uphold the agreement. It has the capability to, but we are not sure if they will.
And what's going to be the evidence of that? What's the proof that China actually follows through on this?
We have no evidence because based on track record, Chinese government has the history of promising and not deliver.
Okay. So Western companies, can Western companies now compete inside of China based on the phase one deal?
Not because yes and no. Based on the phase one deal, the deal says you can compete fairly in China. And the reason we believe there's a chance that they can is because China is trying to, especially for the MSCI, actually drive the Chinese equity market in 2019 for a really big jump.
But like Starbucks, can Starbucks open up and compete? Because that's a big growth
initiative.
They already have. So there's the concern always is the government steps in and starts to put barriers around companies that are U.S. companies that are trying to.
Correct. But currently, it seems like Chinese government is trying to invite more foreign investment. It's less concerned with foreign influence, which is one of.
So what happens with Huawei now?
That depends how the hearings go with Meng Wanzhou, the CFO of Huawei. I think that's the biggest.
So that was yesterday, wasn't it?
Yes.
So what happened? I didn't even hear what happened. Did you guys hear what happened?
I didn't follow.
Okay. She's been there a year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, living in a mansion, that's not that hard.
I know. So what questions do you guys have for Terrence? I didn't mean to dominate this.
No, you're okay. So demographics, what there's roughly three males to every female in China. It's kind of the figure I've heard.
That's too extreme.
Extreme. Okay. Yeah. Is there a demographic issue with too many males versus women? And
yes.
How is that changing what's happening in the country?
Well, I don't think it has a major influence on the country, but it does give women a lot more leverage, which basically drives the tradition away from a traditional male-dominated society. Mm.
So some of the things I've been reading, and Greg was talking about buying these empty buildings, is that a lot of the investors in these are males who feel like they have to have these assets in order to gain companionship of a female. Is that true or not?
That is a basically now it is a requirement almost, but that's not why people buying apartment in those gold city.
So you're saying it's a requirement that the females in the country are looking for men who have
at least some assets behind it, and because real estate price is going through the roof.
So is that really sustainable though? I mean, if we're just buying it for,
well, but it is luxury. Currently a best investment ever. Because for the last 10 years, Chinese equity market returned like 14%.
So if you remove the ghost cities, what are vacancy rates in these cities you're talking about that are good investments?
Well, basically anything. Any real estate investment you have in larger city, like actual cities instead of those ghost cities, they are really good investments.
Okay.
They return, official number is 50% over the last 10 years, but usually that number is suppressed lower. Because it looks really bad if the real estate price goes too high.
Right.
Do you guys have any questions for Terrence?
Yeah. What is sentiment with Chinese citizens on buying foreign or United States products? Is there any like nationalism or anti-nationalism there?
Well, the nationalism in China is usually just for a very short period of time. Say U.S. imposed a tariff on China for that month, people are like, oh, U.S. good or bad, let's not buy from the U.S. But then after very short period of time, essentially this high quality good is, because Chinese market is a consumer driven market. So as long as the goods are high quality, it's still something the Chinese people want. Yes.
Is it a cultural difference? So like with a Starbucks or an Apple iPhone, is it more of a cultural difference and why someone would not buy a phone or a coffee?
Or because of nationalism? No.
Well, I'm saying it's not nationalism, it's just a cultural difference. Is that a case? So I'm a Chinese citizen, I'm gonna go buy a Huawei phone versus an Apple because I just don't like how Apple makes their phones. I like this style, or I don't like Starbucks coffee. I would rather go to Lucky's coffee.
I think
tea.
For Starbucks, it's the cultural difference. Coffee is not that well-loved in
yes.
China. Bubble tea is.
Yeah.
That's why Starbucks is losing ground. But for Huawei's phone, it's just because it's cheaper. It's much cheaper, it's similar. I mean, all the phones nowadays are similar, but then so whoever offered the highest value won.
So in China, they're not as tied to Apple operating system.
Fair, yes.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I got one. So it's very rare for us to invest in any equities in China. So if you would have to pick your favorite, what would it be?
My favorite? There's this three company, Alibaba, Tencent, and the Guizhou Baotai. It's the spirit, the wine, not wine, Chinese spirit company. It's the dominant. I think it's the most expensive company in China. Yes, there's three. Because they have monopoly in China and the government usually don't regulate them that harsh. So they basically get to do their own thing. And because they have a monopoly over the largest population in the world, they can make a lot of money.
So we've gone a little long this week. And thank you guys for being patient with us. We thought it was worthwhile to bring Terrence in just to pick his brain, get his views on what's going on. At this point, we are keeping the position as is in the China ETF and just waiting to see what the traction that comes from phase one starts to look like. So with that, I'll close it down. Thank you guys for all your time. Have a great week.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.